Author Walt Whitman is perhaps best known for his book, Leaves of Grass. He died in 1892, and ever since, scholars have been analyzing his writings. Well, now an Idaho professor is going on a quest to find what could be two lost novels of Walt Whitman. Digging through manuscripts and archives, a University of Idaho professor, Zachary Turpin, is hoping to find a historical treasure buried in time. Turpin is an assistant professor of American literature at the U of I, and he joins me live by telephone. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you for joining us. All right, my first question, before we talk about your quest for the lost novels, tell me about how you've already found two manuscripts by Walt Whitman that nobody even knew about, correct?
Correct. Yeah, you know, I was every bit as surprised as you are to discover such oddities. Walt Whitman, when he published Leaves and Grass for the first time in 1855, had come off 4 or 5 years of really not doing a lot of publishing that scholars were aware of. So Leaves of Grass appears as if out of nowhere. It's a man who is essentially a real estate developer and carpenter, suddenly creating what we now think of as the epic poem of America. It's really shocking, and it's sort of a delightful myth of the carpenter artist. It's also a lie. It's not true at all. When I was a PhD candidate at the University of Houston, I was doing some online digital archival research just in my spare time, which is not a thing I have anymore. And I located some literary notices that were really, really odd. One was for a urban men's wellness series called Manly Health and Training. And it was listed under a known pseudonym, Walt Whitman's. And I thought, well, that's really strange. I didn't know that Walt Whitman had written
something about
a
manly
men's wellness
health
guide.
Right.
Yeah, manly health and training. It's not something that sounded familiar to me. And what it ended up being when I requested some microfilm was indeed a book-length treatise on being a healthy urban male. Everything from how to wear your beard, what to eat. He's really obsessed with a meat-based diet. What shoes to wear. He recommends what we now call sneakers.
Seriously,
it's a very interesting time capsule that gives you a look into Walt Whitman's mind, and also just the life of urban men and women to a lesser extent in New York in the 1850s.
That's kind of hilarious, though, don't you think? I mean, and what I mean by that is that this is not what you would think of when you think of Walt Whitman.
It's true. It's true. And, you know, I think that makes a lot of sense. Walt Whitman didn't come from nowhere. He dropped out of school at the age of 12 to become a typesetter's assistant. And from then on, he worked in newspapers. He was a journalist for decades before he published Leaves of Grass. I mean, he went through several sort of public persona, the journalist, the school teacher, the bohemian dandy, before he settled on the one we think of now, like the bearded, rough everyman. He was very interested in being in control of his public persona.
And then,
and you could see how a manly health guide would not really jive with Leaves of Grass.
Well, exactly. Well. All right. So then the next one you found, it's called The Life and Adventures of Jack Ingle.
That's right. So this is the second find. This happened about a year afterwards. I was, again, going through Whitman's notebooks and manuscripts. They've all been digitized. They're on WhitmanArchive.org. It's really beautiful. And I found a notebook with notes towards something that looked like a novel or novella called, it had a main character named Jack Ingle. It's sort of a Dickensian tale as written in the notebook about a young lawyer to be who has a sort of mustachio twisting evil villain for a boss, very subtly named Mr. Covert. and hijinks ensue. And, you know, I thought that's pretty fascinating, not least because all the character names are so unusual. And for somebody who works with keywords and key phrases doing digital recovery, I thought, well, this is beautiful. And it did end up yielding this oddity, another literary notice in a newspaper for something called Life and Adventures of Jack Ingle. And this was a bit more difficult to find. I had to correspond with the Library of Congress to get scans that were fairly expensive. And it did end up being this lost novella, a full-length Dickens-esque novel about it's sentimental, it's sensational, it's a city mystery novel. There's chases and escapes and romantic coincidences. It's very un-Whitmanian in that way. And you could see, again, as you noted before, how Whitman might not wouldn't necessarily have wanted to remember that terribly widely once he was known as the author of Leaves of Grass.
So he did not publish these two manuscripts under his own name, correct? I mean, you said a pseudonym. So so is that why nobody knew where these were, is that he just did not use his own name?
That's right. Other than some notes toward these things, he didn't use his own name. He used pseudonyms or published them anonymously. And as far as we know, he told few or no people about them. He essentially just let them fall into obscurity as he became the what he thought of as the new poet of the United States. But the reason I'm fascinated with these things is, number one, they are so unusual, and they give us a glimpse into this very dim period in his life when he's developing Leaves of Grass, this decade or so in the 1850s. The second reason I'm interested is that there appear to be more out there.
So I was going to ask you that. So since you've uncovered these, you do believe that there could be more out there. There could be more maybe novels or novellas out there of his.
That's right. So the wonderful thing about Whitman, although I'm sure it wasn't wonderful if you knew him in his lifetime, was that he was what we would now call a pack rat or a hoarder. He kept all the paper that he ever touched. Not the wealthiest of newspapermen, paper was fairly expensive. So you could see how he would just keep reams and reams of his old paper. The delightful thing for researchers and scholars and readers now is that all of that paper has been digitized and is available online. Again, at the Walt Whitman Archive. What you start to see as you read these manuscripts and notebooks and odds and ends is a lot of them don't really seem to have any known connection to anything. And they're very odd. Whitman wrote some letters to newspaper editors in 1850. This is 5 years before Leaves of Grass. He's looking for work. And he offers them a novel, which he calls The Sleep Talker. He says that it is based on a much longer historical Danish novel called The Childhood of King Erik Menved. It's very boring if you pick it up. It's really, really boring. But Whitman claims to have sort of cut it down and simplified it and made it action-packed and romantical. And he even estimates how many leaded newspaper columns it would fill. So he says it would fill 66 columns. That's three columns a day for 22 days.
Wow.
And he refers to it as a completed manuscript. You know, who knows what happened to it, but I have a hard time believing that a down-on-his-luck Whitman would have simply thrown out a finished novella.
I'm speaking with University of Idaho professor Zachary Turpin about the lost novels of Walt Whitman. Okay, so there's another one out that you believe is out there, and this is called Proud Antoinette. Tell me about that.
That's right. That's right. So, again, in true, interesting 1850s fashion, Whitman is many things. He's not just a journalist. He's not just a poet. He's also a veteran fiction writer. So we already know that he wrote a temperance novel called Franklin Emmons. We know he wrote 24 short stories. He was good at placing his fiction. Around the time of Manly Health and Training, which is 1858, 1859, he writes some notes for another novel-length-looking thing called Proud Antoinette, a romance of New York. And it's a madcap, sensationalized story in which a prostitute tries to break up a marriage and commits a murder in order to inveigle money out of a nice young man and his girlfriend.
I'd read that right now.
I would read it too.
Right.
She even ends up being unmasked as a Quakeress who became a prostitute. It's really sensationalized and bizarre sounding for Whitman. But as we are beginning to learn, Whitman was not just the poet of the Americas. He was a novelist. He was a journalist. He was someone who was looking for the genre that would fit his mode of expression. And what's fascinating to me is that this is a period in which Whitman, had his novels sold better, probably could have ended up a lifelong novelist.
So you got some seed money from the University of Idaho to go on these quests to find these novels because you do think they exist, and you actually, am I correct that you leave for New York tomorrow?
I do. Yeah, I leave early in the morning tomorrow.
to go on this quest. So tell me A, about what you're going to do with the seed money and then this trip to New York.
Sure. Well, UIdaho's generosity is really incredible. So the SEA grant is for early career faculty to go and develop their research. And I was very fortunate to win one of the dozen and a half SEA grants that were offered this year. So what I'm going to do with these funds is, number one, travel to New York City. And then while I'm there, I made John Dover to Boston as well, I'm going to be going through all the archives that I can get to. So the New York Public Library is the big one.
Mm-hmm.
There's a Brooklyn Historical Society. There's a New York Historical Society. NYU and Columbia have archives full of microfilm, manuscripts, papers, newspapers, all of these things that don't always travel well. And you can't necessarily request them from Moscow, Idaho. So with these DC grant funds, I'm going to be going and interacting with these things that are currently undigitized, looking yet again for all these loose ends.
And if you find these novels, what happens?
Oh, if I find them? Okay. So,
what happens?
If history is any indicator, I'll probably use a lot of expletives in a very quiet microfilm reader room. And then after calling my wife and telling her, here we go again, I would get the gears rolling. So when something like this happens, it's not a very typical situation, but there is a fairly standard process. Now, I would get in touch with Whitman scholars that I know at the University of Iowa, at the University of Nebraska, Lincoln, all over the country and the world, swear them to secrecy, and begin the process of bringing the text back to the world. That means transcribing it, removing all the errors, getting images of the pages, talking with possibly publishers about making it into a book or something like that. These are the things that are not your everyday scholarship, but when an opportunity like this comes along, it's really worth taking the time to pursue it.
Well, I am excited to hear what happens to that trip to New York. So we will be in touch with you after that and maybe have you back on the show. But of course, if it's secrecy, we'll wait until you can talk about it.
Okay.
I've been speaking to the University of Idaho professor, assistant professor Zachary Turpin about the lost novels of Walt Whitman as he goes on this quest. Thank you so much for joining us today. Fun conversation.
Oh, thank you. It's my pleasure.